I tell you, Dr. Nagel, there's no question that there are thorny issues in the world of sports. As you mentioned, what's going to be happening with regards to the pipeline of players down the road, particularly in football, with the concerns about concussions, which is a very, very serious and legitimate concern. What's going to be happening as we move deeper into the 21st century, and we may have athletes, male and female, who have causes that they're concerned about and possibly have more of them wanting to make their statements with the platform that they have. So much going on. But that said, there's something else that I know some people are questioning, you know, they're asking questions about, but at the same time, others are saying, hey, this is great. I'm glad we're able to have this experience. And that has to do with the ability of people to go to watch the games, period, whether we're talking on the semi-pro level, the pro level, and certainly we could look at high school games, things like that. But I'm particularly looking at those situations where it may cost a little bit more than a high school game to get in to watch.
Well, I think we've created an interesting dynamic, and this is both successful and a failure for the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL, big time college sports. Is that the product has become in such demand to see live that in many cases the prices that are paid for seats are extremely expensive. And so it's certainly, that's a business success. Anytime you can drive demand where people want to pay $100 for an NBA ticket or $75 for a University of South Carolina football ticket or $150 to watch Dallas Cowboys play or whatever, that's a business success. But it's also interesting too in that you're driving a lot of people that might want to go to games into a situation where they may not be able to go to a game all year. Or you've taken people that maybe 20, 30 years ago would go to, say, one baseball game every homestand, and now that a team has, so they might go to 8-10 games a year, and now maybe that becomes a situation that they only go to 2 or 3. So I think there's some interesting questions right now. We deal with this quite a bit with our students, with our consulting stuff, with the internships and the various industry places that we work with. And that's, okay, how do we create a model to maximize our on-site revenue, but also how do we create a model and so that person making $50,000 a year or $40,000 a year can actually still come and access and see and experience the live, because nothing is the same as live. How do you create an opportunity for people to actually consume your product live if they don't make six figures or more? And I think that's a real interesting question that's going on in many of the different areas of sports. And we've even seen it now, as you mentioned, with high school. High schools are starting to adopt the model of how do we create luxury suites? How do we make sure that we maximize parking revenues? How do we generate revenue? And certainly that doesn't mean high school sports are going to be unaffordable, but they're going down the same path as a lot of the more popular sports and sport leagues are going.
And so up to this point, then, these higher ticket prices have not translated into seats going unfilled.
Well, and it depends on, obviously, the sport. It depends on the game. It depends on the situation. Baseball is still very, very affordable. You can buy a bleacher ticket for a major league game at most places for, $10, $15. You can buy bleacher seats for most minor league games for $5. So I think you're seeing more and more middle class and lower class families consuming sport. If when they want to consume it live, they're not going to the NFL or the NBA. They're going to minor league sports. They're going to college. They're going to high school. I think what's also interesting is that because of these high ticket prices, we're creating a generation of fans who only consume through the media, that only can consume through television.
Yes.
And that's certainly okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But if I'm a kid and I'm 10, 12, 14, 16 years of age and I never go to a game live, if I get to be 25, 30, 35 and then have disposable income and could afford to go to a game, do I make that consumer choice in 15, 20 years? I think that's a big question we're grappling with in our industry right now.
That's such a great point, because a lot of these companies really like the idea of grabbing people while they're very, very young so that they become repeat customers. Is it that way in sports as well?
Oh, certainly. And I think, you know, I'm in my 40s, so I'm old enough to remember going to, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area and going to Oakland A's games and Golden State Warrior games. And I came from, you know, what you would probably call as a middle-class family. So we didn't always have a lot of disposable income, but it was still affordable. We could go to an A's, you know, we would go to four or five A's games a year. We would try to get to one or two Golden State Warrior games a year. And that wasn't something that would cause my parents to have to figure out, okay, is this the only thing we're going to spend money on for 3 months? The situation now is there's many people that are middle class that are looking at NBA games or NFL games and saying, okay, we might go to one game, and that's going to be our entertainment for 3 months, for 4 months. This is the one thing we're going to do as a family. And I think there's some danger in that if you're the NFL, the NBA, and so forth, because if that 10-year-old isn't exposed to going to games, is that same 10-year-old, when they turn 30, going to want to go to games if they just have only, the only experience they ever have is watching on television? I think that's a question we're all wondering how that's going to play out in many cases.
How it's going to play out. And so one of the things that you mentioned, the NBA is another league where that is a concern. And speaking of the NBA, how are they looking with regards to the playoffs?
Well, it's been an interesting playoff so far. I think the ratings have been okay. You know, the NBA will not ever admit it, but certainly, you know, as long as LeBron keeps playing, that certainly helps. with them, with the Cavaliers being up 2-0 now on Toronto, I think there's probably a lot of people in the NBA office that are very silently very happy. You know, you've got some really good players still alive on the West side as well. You know, the Warriors are still playing and Houston's still playing. And so I think the NBA playoffs have been very exciting. There's been a few series that went in round one to game seven, which is always great because it pulls in more casual fans. I think it'll be interesting to see how this round of playoffs plays out with the 76ers and the Celtics and pardon me, and I think we could have a very, very exciting conference finals on both the West and the East, and I think we may probably be looking at a Cavs-Warriors finals again, although I don't think it's as likely a guarantee as it's been the last couple of years, but I think the NBA is very happy with how the playoffs have gone right now, and I think they're quietly rooting for a few more Game 7s and quietly rooting for LeBron and some of the other top stars to continue to advance.
Speaking of LeBron, have the statisticians or anyone else been able to make a final decision as to who is the all-time top basketball player, NBA player?
I think that's a hard thing to say. I don't think you can ever really determine because the eras are so different.
Mm-hmm.
And so statistically, you know, sometimes the NBA is more focused on defense, sometimes on offense, and so it's hard sometimes to translate and say, okay, is LeBron better than Michael Jordan? Was Bill Russell the most dominant defender? I think the thing that you always do is I think you just look at the greatest players and you say, hey, these are among the greats all time, and we're just very fortunate we had a chance to watch them play. I think LeBron's greatness has been unbelievable because he's been doing it so long, and he is such an impactful player on offense and on defense. And I think that is one of the things that I think the other thing about the greatest player of all time argument is LeBron's keeps playing. You know, he might play another 4 or 5 years. And so if he keeps playing like he did this year, I mean, statistically, he'll be the all-time leader in just about everything. So I think it's just a blessing to be able to watch some of these guys play. And LeBron is certainly one of the he's in that discussion of five greatest players ever, certainly.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Nagel, thank you so much for having enlightened us again while at the same time inspiring us about the game of sports. We really appreciate speaking with you.
Oh, thanks a lot for having me. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Stay with me, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back.